So I just need to disclose that I have no relationships with anyone or any commercial entity.
Oh, too much information. This
presentation, what we're going to do is we're going to just cover real briefly on some of the science and why we got started in this and why it keeps us going, talk about our inventory and action plan, and then talk about some of the different programs we have to implement the strategies that we had in our action plan, residential, business, and then talk about state and regional actions. Because in reality, while locals can help move the needle, we need help from the state and federal partners. So just real briefly, some of the data you can see here. This is average temperatures, five-year averages in 11 western states. And if you've looked at climate change or greenhouse gas emissions data in the past, this doesn't look too unfamiliar. The last several, the right side of the chart, you can see that the trends are significantly upward. If we look at globally, I know these pictures look a little scary, but notice the main points are the Arctic is much warmer these days compared to climatology of the late 20th century. And but it also demonstrates some interesting items. If you look in that lower left figure, you can see that the winter of 2010 was the second warmest of all the 130 years. But because we experience the world in our local environment, you can see that over the United States, it was much colder than the climatology. And so you remember the stories about the snowstorms in Washington, D.C., and all that nonsense about global cooling. But then, of course, in the summertime, it was much warmer than average, as you probably, a lot of you remember. If we talk about where we've been and where we're going, we look at future projections for CO2 and what the impacts are on temperatures. And you can see here that you've got two scenarios. You've got a growth business as usual, let's call it, and then in 2030 you've also got a policy scenario which assumes that global emissions of carbon will decrease 2% per year. And you can see that on the right, the temperature impacts from that, those two curves, you see that we see probably at least a 3 degrees Celsius warming globally if we could continue on the business as usual. But even with the policy scenario, we still see about a 2% increase. You can see the curve starting to flatten. The problem with CO2, of course, is that it has a long lifetime in the atmosphere, and so what's there now will continue to impact us, and hence we also need to be working on climate adaptation plans. And then this was just a very recent study that came out in October from the Center for Atmospheric Research here in Boulder, and it just shows that the chances for drought frequencies throughout the world. And if you notice in that lower left or the lower part of that figure in the 2060s, the drought index really takes a turn for the worse over much of the upper plains and, in fact, much of the United States. So that has us concerned. Denver, on average, gets about 14 inches of precipitation a year. So we need leadership on this issue, and if we're going to move forward and address this problem, we've all got to come together. That's developed countries, developing countries. We need federal government support, not just in terms of policies, but also in terms of research R&D. I used to have a slide in here that showed the different levels of expenditures in 2005, and we spent all told about $3 billion nationally for energy research. And that's, you know, anything you can imagine toward clean coal, nuclear. And in that same year, we would spend about $20 billion on farm subsidies and $75 billion on military R&D. And that's not even operational cost. State and local governments have taken the lead on developing greenhouse gas mitigation strategies. We just can't afford to wait. It's just something that we need to get started on. A lot of these policy options take many years just to get on the books, and then the implementation of those measures is slow every year. So you need to wait 10 or 20 years before you really start to see the cumulative impacts from those changes. And don't overlook the power of the individual to reduce greenhouse gas emissions as well. Individually, yes, it can be a little discouraging. You look at the numbers, sometimes they're not very big, But when you multiply that across 100 or 200 million people, the impacts are significant. At the city scale, there were over 1,000 signatories in 2009 to the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement. Mayor Hickenlooper signed on to that in 2005, and that really got the ball rolling in Denver. And cities, why are cities important for implementing sustainability policy, but also, you know, the climate mitigation strategies? Well, the majority of people live in urban areas throughout the world, and that's only going to increase as we go look forward for the next 50 years. And land use and transportation policies really are driven at the local level. And so that's why it's important for public health agencies to be involved. But we do need state and federal support, as I mentioned, and I'll talk about some examples of where we see the impacts of that. And at least in my limited world of environmental health and looking at other jurisdictions and agencies that are working on this issue, the public health field really, we need participation. I know in Denver, at least, we need public health to be more involved in energy policy, but also in a lot of these land use decisions and in helping us develop climate adaptation plans. And because I think the real impact that I see, the benefit I see there, is how the message gets across to people. The scientific community hasn't, I mean, you know, we've suffered our bruises over the last couple of years, and we need additional help with in terms of messaging. So this was Denver's carbon footprint as of 2005. That was our baseline year. And the main thing I want to point out here is that over 50% of the carbon footprint in Denver comes from building energy use. And the other thing I want to point out is that lower sliver right in the middle, all of our city government buildings, and including DIA, all the energy used in those buildings only accounts for 3% of that footprint. So even if we were 100% clean and green, we wouldn't be moving the needle very much. And so that's why you can see it's important for these to be broad community-based strategies. So our climate action plan was built off of that inventory. We set an initial goal of a 10% per capita reduction by 2012. I'll show you where we're at in terms of that goal. And the other longer-term goal was to get back to 1990 levels by 2020. That's a pretty common goal when you look at states and locals across the U.S. Some are more aggressive. It's a wide array of strategies. As I mentioned, our actions alone municipally will not make much of a dent. And we need partners. I mean, we just can't do this on our own. And fortunately, we've had really encouraging participation from businesses, business associations, nonprofit community, and residents. So if we look at the trends, you can see from 1990 to 2005, which was our baseline year, we had a pretty steady increase. So we projected forward business as usual in 2020. And then you can see that in 2007, we started to dip below that business as usual line. And in 2009, we saw a big decrease. And I know a lot of you might be thinking, well, that's probably just the economy. And I can confidently stand up here and say, no, it wasn't just because of the economy. The majority of that decrease was because of various policies, probably the most important being the renewable portfolio standard. Our investor-owned utility just exceeded the 10% threshold last year, 5 years ahead of schedule, and I'll talk more about that. But you can also see that with what's on the books right now and what we think will be on the books at the end of 2010, that we will get to our 2020 goal. So now we have to start thinking about beyond 2020. I mean, the 25% reduction is great, but we know we need more if we're as we're looking to 2050. One of our residential strategies, the Neighborhood Energy Action Partnership, this started in 2008. It was convened a bunch of different agencies and different perspectives. You know, economic development perspective, I think, was helpful here. The nonprofits, Groundwork Denver, Mile High Youth Corps, are really active in our community and really dedicated to trying to make this a program that that they can lead with assistance from the locals and state. And then we targeted 29 lower income neighborhoods for this particular program over 5 years. And this was our first full year. And I want to point out that this was initiated prior to the stimulus funds, the DOE block grants. And so this was just something that was an extension of our climate action plan. The different faces of NEEP. NEEP has been really successful in getting community volunteers, the Mile High Youth Corps. And it makes sense if you think about it, and people come knocking at your door. These teams are canvassing through the neighborhoods, trying to enlist participation in all sorts of sustainability measures. And it's better, you're probably more apt to participate or want to participate if it's somebody who lives in your community, cares about your community, and not some guy dressed in a pink shirt. So measuring success, we really understand internally, I think that's our focus as a local government, is we need to be tracking all these initiatives and helping to quantify what the impacts are. We eventually will need to get to a point where we do a cost-benefit analysis and figure out what's the best bang for our buck. And so working with the nonprofits, sometimes they look at us as, that's too much bean counting, and we can't do that, and that's kind of complicated. And so what we're trying to do is just standardize the tool for everybody to report into, and we'll take care of all the kind of the back-end calculations and the reporting. And so that seems to be working pretty well. You can see that the various metrics we track, and some of those numbers look small, and this was really kind of the pilot year, 2009. We've done an additional half dozen in 2010. But that 2% number, if you look at household weatherized, that looks like a really small number, but for traditional programs that just, the utility has rebates, or the government has rebates, or the utility has incentives, you see less than a 1% participation rate. So just in this pilot year, we moved that needle more than has traditionally been moved. Our small business energy program, this is something that's really kind of started up this year. We've been successful through grants and some of the bigger DOE grants that we really need to address small business. If you remember from the pie chart of the footprint, commercial and industrial energy use in buildings was 33% of the footprint. So if you're going to do anything about making a dent in the footprint, you need to address commercial and industrial buildings. And so these are just some of the targets we have for our program. And I wanted to point out one of our case studies, this little Chinese restaurant. And we went in there, and we had a program. We just looked, and they really only have lighting. They don't have any kind of mechanical systems or anything like that. And so we swapped out their bulbs, about a little less than $400 investment. And that's a 4-ton reduction in CO2 per year. And to put that in perspective, if you were to do what we're doing at the residential level, you would have to do 16 homes to come up to equal that business. The other thing is they're saving $500 a year now. And so that's less than a 1-year payback. And to put that $500 in perspective, a typical profit margin for a restaurant like this is about 5%. So to save that $500 or to get that $500, they'd have to do an additional $10,000 in sales. So that's really kind of a great example of a case study. We can't do it alone at the city level. We can help move the needle, but regionally we need to do some things. Denver has the Fast Tracks program, which we're currently in the midst of implementing. This was approved back in 2004 by the voters of the North Front Range counties, and it approved the sales tax increase. That original cost was about $5 billion, and that number's gone up over time. With the economy being a little bit lower, it's dropped, but it's still pretty significant. It's a commuter and light rail expansion project going out to the airport, going to our north suburbs, our west suburbs. We've got our southern suburbs connected via light rail already. So in 5 to 10 years, Denver is going to look a lot different, and how you get around the metro area will change a lot. The renewable portfolio standard I mentioned was enacted by voters, a statewide referendum, 10% by 2015. And that has been increased twice in the legislature, and most recently in 2010, with the backing and support of the investor-owned utility XL Energy, we are now going to hit a 30% target by 2020. And that's really great news, because that really helps locals be able to achieve some of these targets they've set. So we'll continue to revise our action plan, focusing on the long-term goals. We had a lot of strategies in our original action plan, and I'm not going to say we were naive, because we knew it was going to be hard to achieve, but they were all local strategies. They were all things we could control, because things at the federal level looked a lot different. Things at the state level were in flux here, And so it was probably not realistic to expect that we would have hit our target just on actions we could control. But fortunately, those other things happened to help us meet our goal. We need to do a better job of communicating our successes. Some of our programs are early in their implementation stage. It'll take another 2 years to probably see enough results from those, but we need to make sure that we do a better job or a good job of communicating what the impacts were. And that's important for the politically, to get political support as well, because once these grant funds go away, you need to find a way to make these programs sustainable. And then we have not yet developed a climate adaptation plan, and that's regionally we can collaborate on that, because there's a lot, we all have impacts from the same types of factors, whether it's drought or increased temperatures. How we deal with them will be different between jurisdictions, but we need to be talking. So we can't ignore what the data is telling us. Our climate action plan has put us on a purposeful path to sustainability. Mayor Hickenlooper has been very visionary. He's had some great people he's brought in, and fortunately he's going to be our next governor. I've been able to ride the coattails of some pretty great people. We have to deal with mitigation strategies and adaptation strategies. It's not one or the other. We just took on mitigation because that's what we understood best. But public health really needs to get involved in that. And I think that's what now is really an opportune time. Thank you.